Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the virtual launch. I'm so excited, and I'm sure you are too, of a new Mitch Rapp thriller by Vince Flynn. And joining us tonight, oh joy, is Brad Thor, who there's a lot of crossover, Brad tells me, between the readers of Vince Flynn and Brad Thor, and now Kyle Mills as well. So here we go. This is the sixth book. It's called Total Power, and I'm happy to say that Friday, our autographed copies arrived fresh from the hand of Kyle, and so we have them here, and we still have a few unsold copies, and we still have a few copies of Near Dark, Brad's wonderful July Scott Harbath thriller, autographed as well. So do yourself a favor and support the authors by ordering a copy from our website. Good evening, guys. Great to see you.
Hi, Barbara. Hi, Kyle.
How are you?
Congratulations.
Thank you. Always fun. Pub day.
Yeah, I think it was, forget who said it, but I think it was Dorothy Parker that said, I don't like writing, but I love having written.
Yes, it's so true.
So Kyle, you are in Wyoming. Tell me that's not a snowdrift behind you. It's some kind of wall covering.
No, that's just, well, it did snow quite a bit a few days ago, which is great. It put the fires out, but we're still getting the California smoke, so.
It's still 106 here. I mean, oh, it's hard for me to have a lot of empathy with you in the snow. Lord. But anyway, I also forgot, Patrick just brought over to me, so I need to flash this too, and then we'll get down to work. We have this beautiful Christmas card, which is wishing you a happy holiday, so to speak, holiday cheer from Mitch Rapp, and a copy of it goes with each of our copies of Total Power. So, very cool. Did you design that yourself, Kyle, or is that the work of your publisher?
You know, a lot of those are my wife's ideas. She's really creative, and then the publisher ran with it. Their art people ran with them.
It's very nice, indeed. So the book is called Total Power, and if you think about it, you will recognize that the threat we are looking at is a threat here to the nation's power system. So what a fiendish idea. What inspired you?
You know, years ago, I had written a book called Darkness Falls, and it was about the oil supply. And in the end, the hero saves the day and everything. But I always thought, what if he hadn't saved the day? What if the power went out? And I've wanted to explore that forever. And then I'm always looking for a new challenge for Mitch Rapp. So I thought this one I wanted to throw at him was, what if he doesn't, you know, succeed? And what if the terrorists, you know, actually carry out this massive attack, and then he has to pick up the pieces? How would he handle that? So I got to explore that too in this book.
Wow. What do you think? Scott up to that too, Brad?
Yeah, listen, I think it's a terrific, terrific idea. And I know, just having been friends with the Secretary of Energy, Rick Perry, that this is something that the government is really worried about, is because terrorists have been probing, right, Kyle? They've been looking for ways, yeah. Foreign governments, the Chinese, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, this is a very plausible plot. And this is an exciting idea for RAP.
Yeah, and Rick Perry himself has said that, you know, our grid's getting probed by, you know, malicious actors hundreds of thousands of times a day, literally hundreds of thousands of times.
So in Arizona, where life would be totally uninhabitable in summer if we lost electricity, I mean, it seriously would. In fact, I had a discussion today with my husband, having finished your book, that we're going to buy a generator and diesel. I'm not worried as much about terrorists as I am about weather. Because look at California with rolling brownouts and, you know, and aside from everything else, how did PG&E let their system get so completely out of date? I mean, no one was watching Pacific Gas and Electric. I mean, they were a big power when I was an undergraduate at Stanford in the 1958. And as far as I can tell, they haven't updated their equipment particularly since then.
There are parts of our grid that are literally a century old.
Yeah.
And stuff that is pretty much irreplaceable, or literally parts, huge pieces of machinery that were sent in or that were installed using rail. And those railways are gone. They have been for 50 years. So you can't even, nobody even knows how you'd get those replacement parts into there.
You know, one of the most, I thought the most worthwhile idea in 2016 that was proffered was to upgrade our country's infrastructure, to go back to something like the Civil Conservation Corps, which helped us through the Great Recession. And I'm really sad that that has not come to pass, because everywhere you look, you can see the infrastructure definitely needs shoring up. And certainly the power grid would be right in the middle of that, right?
Absolutely. That needs to be generally updated. It's, you could go to a much smarter grid. You could incorporate renewables into it a lot more smoothly than they are now, potentially new nuclear. There's a lot of work to be done there. The security of it, though, could be done on it would be much easier than a full upgrade. And it's something that really needs to be looked at.
So I have some comments here from an actual cyber warrior, self-styled, my son-in-law, who does that for a major energy company. And I actually gave him a copy of your book to find out what he would say. But why don't you give us a quick little scenario of the story, and then I will proffer some comments, and then Brad has a bunch of questions. Let's do it that way.
Okay. So briefly, it's a kind of an American psychotic who teams up with some terrorists to take down the grid. And he's sort of uniquely positioned to do this. He's an expert in our energy infrastructure. And he uses kind of a combination of physical attacks and cyber attacks, which I used, there's been a history of those. Most people don't know that, but you can kind of use real history to build a scenario that's pretty realistic, I think. And then Mitch Rapp has to come in and after it's been done in this case, and sort of try to pick up the pieces and operate in an environment where, the country's melting down, there's no power, no heat, you can't pump gas, his communications are all down. So it creates an interesting environment and universe for him to move around in.
And if you think there are any thrills in this, I'm going to tell you that Mitch Rapp and his team taking out some people or trying to in the middle of a flight from Granada to wherever it is, New York, is really a terrifying opening scene. So, I used to fly all the time, and now I'm beginning to worry I'm losing my flying legs. Do you feel that way, Brad? You've been in lockdown as long as I have.
It's crazy. It's coming. It's going to be, before we know it, a year since we've been on airplanes. And it really is weird to think that all that is ground to a halt. So I agree with you. Now they're starting, Singapore Airlines is, because they want to keep their crews sharp and their pilots trained, they're offering a staycation and what they're calling a flight to nowhere, where you go to the airport and you get on a Singapore Airlines flight for 3 hours, come back to the same airport, but then a limo takes you to your hotel for a package weekend. It's crazy, all this stuff.
Wow.
I'm not that desperate.
Well, I hope I haven't lost my flying legs. So anyway, if you all think watching this that this might be an implausible scenario, here's some real world commentary from somebody who really is out there as a cyber warrior. Hi, Mom, he says. I'm not sure what part of this you wanted my feedback in, but I'm through chapter 4, and here's where I am. 1, with the gentleman, parentheses scumbag, looking to sell information about the power grid, what was presented up front was access to power companies. What was not specific, at least yet, he's only on chapter 4, was what type of access. A lot of companies, including power companies, have multiple environments. Some are softer than others. Take manufacturing as an example. They may have their business network versus their manufacturing network. And power companies, that's often described as the IT, the information technology network, and the OT, the operational technology network, with strong controls between them. There have been reported compromises of IT networks of power companies in the United States, but orchestrating compromises in the OT space, the operational part, is less heard of, either due to infrequency or due to it being classified. So does that figure into your book? Did you distinguish between IT and OT?
Not really. I think it gets too technical for a Vince Flynn novel, I think. There have been incursions into the OT space, like a Dragonfly would be an example, which was a Russian incursion. And they got in deep enough to control parts of the grid. and they take a lot of pictures of our control systems so they know how they work. So it's, yeah, it's not as common, it's not as well known, but it definitely happens. Same thing with physical attacks. You know, our substations have been attacked historically. So all you have need is a rifle.
Mm-hmm. Well, he goes on to say that Google Nuclear 17, which occurred about 18 months ago, go away, and was about malware in the business network of a company that runs a nuclear plant. There was no danger to the plant, but it caused a bit of panic. But talking about impact to the United States, if a major hit was to occur, I would not underestimate the impact. Day or two, not too bad. Anything more than that, we would have chaos ensuing in the country. Banks, hospitals, grocery stores, and so forth. Then he says there's a great three-book series by John Matheson that covers what might happen after an electromagnetic pulse attack against the country. Wow. So yeah. These guys are out there thinking about that all the time. He talks about Iranian environment that's been hit on numerous occasions. And then he says it's likely an attack against the United States power environment would include kinetic, physical, as well as cyber activity. There's a biannual national exercise that takes place in the United States, possibly with Canada and Mexico now, to simulate attack scenarios and response capabilities. These are referred to as Grid X exercises. It's intense and has thousands of people with hundreds of organizations participating. And he signs off, I am a cyber defender working in the power industry today, and I feel pretty confident we have what it takes to keep our grid up and running. However,
I hope so.
Yeah. So your scenario is really not only plausible, but even potential, which is a horrible thought.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the former head of this NSA said he believed that there were a number of state actors that already had the ability to take down our grid. And the former CIA director said that if it happened and it the grid stayed down for a year, between 2/3 and 90% of the American population would die off. So, I mean, if you think about it, it's an incredible scenario. It's terrifying. I mean, particularly nobody thinks about this because it tends not to happen long enough. But after about a couple of weeks, water delivery fails. So now you're stuck in Phoenix and there's no water, no sanitation, nothing. And that's not a great recipe.
Well, climate is the potential bad actor in all this. And then as Stella Remington pointed out years and years ago, she was the head of MI5, that the hardest attack or the most difficult attack to stop is one that comes from within your own country and not from an outside actor. So that's at work here. So Brad, you said you had some interesting questions. I'm sort of done. You want to take over here?
Sure, I would be happy. So Barbara, as you and I discussed, there's a lot of crossover with readers of the Mitch Rapp books and the Scott Harvath books. And I put out on social media, I said I was gonna be doing this with Kyle. And for those of you who don't know, Kyle and I have been friends for years, since before I was ever an author. When Kyle was an author and I was like, wow, this is so cool. This guy's actually done it. He's written books, he's gotten them published. And Kyle gave me one of my very first blurbs for Lions of Lucerne, which I've always been grateful for. So this is kind of fun for me to be here tonight and help kick off the virtual book tour for you, Kyle. So the questions that I'm going to ask you are questions that I got from more than one person. It seemed to be there were certain things that people really wanted to know about you and your writing process. But the one comment that came through louder than anything else is what an incredible job you've done taking over the Mitch Rapp character for the late Vince Flynn. My comments were just exploding with compliments for you and what a great job you've done with that. So I'd like to start there and ask you, what did you have to do? We've talked about this before, but for those who don't know, what did you have to do to get up to speed to really become the new expert on Mitch Rapp since you were going to write him? What did that look like?
It was a big job. You know, I'd read the books, but over the course of 20 years or something, as Vince had written them. So I went back and read them all in one push from beginning to end chronologically, which I remember was 6,512 pages. I still remember that. I calculated it. And took like 150 pages of notes on everything, you know, from his word choice to, you know, the entire universe and all the, you know, the relationships between characters and everything, and tried to really figure out his voice and how he would have handled the next book, which he'd written three pages of, and which kind of arced over from the last book he wrote, The Last Man. So I really wanted to create, you know, I said, you know, a forgery, you know, that no one would really know the difference. And so that was the goal at the beginning.
So to that end of having completely digested the world of Mitch Rapp, and then you start, you create these forgeries, you've had to create new characters along the way. What is your favorite new character since beginning the Mitch Rapp books that you've created?
I created a Russian assassin named Grisha Azarov. And the I always like to throw something new at Mitch. And Mitch had never faced somebody who was about his level. And I thought, how would he react to that? Because it's always, you know, things are pretty easy for him. And so I created this sort of superhuman Russian assassin to come after him. And he really hated that guy. You know, at the end of the book, he gets blown off an oil rig. His hair is literally on fire. He has to put it in the sand. And he's thinking, I've really had enough of this guy. So that was a lot of fun. And he came back and they sort of became friends after that.
So that dovetails into another question that I got from several people, which is, it's a comment, then I'm going to turn it into a question, which is, you write fantastic villains, fantastic multidimensional bad guys. Everybody wants to know, what's your secret to writing such great bad guys?
Yeah, those are really important. You know, it's funny because Vince wrote that he had created Mitch Rapp, and people know him so much for that, and they forget that one of the reasons those books were great is because he had amazing villains to fight against. And so for me, it's easy because I love villains. I like them so much more than heroes because they just have, it's so diabolical, you know, and typically they're the author of the story, right? I mean, Mitch Rapp has absolutely nothing to do. Scott Harvath has nothing to do if there's no villain, right? They just mowing their lawn. So I love writing these guys. What motivates them to do it? I love thinking about that. And I like to think the intricate, you know, attack. How could you really do it? You know, you and I do play that same thing out. How would this really happen? And we both know exactly how it would happen. And maybe in the book, we don't write it exactly the way it would happen because, you know, you probably don't want to go too far down that road. But it's so fun to be evil.
Well, speaking of evil and speaking of villains, here's the other huge question I got. There is something that Vince used to do with Mitch Rapp that a lot of people asked me. They begged me. They said, please ask Kyle, when will Mitch Rapp appear before Congress so he can hand them their asses once again? They love that about some of Vince's work. So do you have any plans to sit him in front of Congress and have him tear the Congress people apart?
Maybe. He does punch out a congressman in this book and leaves him to die.
People are going
to
like that.
So that's a good one. Possibly, because in the next three books, I'm going to delve more into America's internal politics than I have historically. So Okay. Yeah, that might be coming, actually.
So taking over a franchise, difficult work. Obviously weighs heavy on your shoulders. You got a lot of responsibility to Lisa and the family, of course, all the fans and all that. What's been the most rewarding part of writing the rap novels for you? What would you pick out as a high point or two if you want to go for two?
I think absolutely the high point has been the fans' reaction and support, because I really thought hard about whether I wanted to do this because it was such a huge franchise and the character is so beloved and feels so real to people that I didn't know if people would want it continued or if they'd just want to see Mitch go with Vince. So when I signed on, I was really prepared. You know, I told Kim, Kim's my wife, Brad knows, other people might not, you know, get ready for the hate mail. I signed on, they made the announcement, and I was ready for the flood of hate mail. And what I got was just a flood of love. That people did not want to see that character die with Vince. They wanted his legacy to carry on, and they were super excited about it. That's what got me out of bed every morning to write The Survivor, which was a huge challenge, you know, to write a book that, you know, was meant to be by Vince and not by me.
How are you dealing with Rap's age? You've got, God rest his soul, our dear friend, Mr. Cussler, who kept Dirk Pitts pretty much frozen in time, you know, for all this stuff. I know I've got to deal with it in my books. Are you dealing with it? Are you ignoring it? Which is okay too. That's an artistic choice. Are you dealing with Rap? Is he getting a little creaky? Is it tougher to get out of bed in the morning? Tougher to recover from drinking all night? Or is it just, nope, superhuman, he's still 30, you know, in at heart? And
that's an interesting one because Vince aged him realistically. So, and I didn't know what to do about that initially. And I decided, no, I was going to freeze him in time. And then I got rid of Stan Hurley, I got rid of because I calculated that he was like in his early 80s and he was still like going out on missions. And I thought, that poor guy. I'm going to have him go out in a blaze of glory. So
oxygen tank explodes. Tube comes out of his nose.
Pretty much. Yeah. But I thought much more, he's just going to hobble off somewhere. So I decided it was time to kind of freeze him. And so now he does, but he just still has that sense like Scott does of it's a little harder to get up in the morning. But for me, it's more the accumulation of injuries, you know?
Like an athlete.
Yeah, it's not the time, it's the mileage, right?
Right. Well, so I've got one more question, and I didn't know if I was going to ask you this, and it's not so much a question as to would you do it, in answer it, don't answer it, but I get asked this question anytime your name is mentioned with mine. And fans desperately want you and me to do some sort of a project together to bring Scott Harvath and Mitch Rapp. Of all the characters out there, I have never seen a crossover like this where so many readers read you and read me and want us to bring our protagonists together. Do you see that as well? Or is it only my folks that I'm hearing this from?
I see it all the time. Yeah, I get that all the time.
That or who'd win the fight? Which I hate that question. Who'd win the fight?
Who'd win the fight? No, I see them more as reluctant allies who drive each other crazy. It could be like the Odd Couple. And you know, you and I have talked about doing projects in the past and we've never really been able to pull it together. That would be really fun. It would be such an interesting, you know, matchup between those two and how they would get along and stuff. It's complicated though.
Yeah, well, maybe something short, maybe a short story, maybe a little, you know, shy of a novella or something. We'll talk offline.
It'd be super fun. I have to say, and you know, I've never collaborated on a book before.
Which neither have I. So
have either, yeah.
It would be an interesting thing. The last question I want to ask Barbara of Kyle is, what is the coolest thing writing Total Power that you learned or you think readers are going to take from the book? What do you think is one? I know that it's packed with cool stuff. I've talked to people at Simon & Schuster. I mean, this book is just, everybody is raving about you just knocked it out of the park with Total Power. But what was one of the kind of, wow, I didn't know that, or what you thought was one of the cool things in researching and writing the book that you discovered?
So with this book, I didn't really make anything up about the vulnerability of the grid. So anything you read about the grid, or that there was some congressional hearing and it said this or it said that, that's all true. I didn't, it's fun when your research, well, sort of fun, sort of terrifying when your research does your writing for you. But yeah. I think the thing that my takeaway from this was that the grid should be an absolute priority because well, you know, it's unlikely that the Russians are going to row over here in their crappy little navy and, you know, try to invade America. You know, they could do it. A spec ops team and a couple of buttons pushed in Moscow could do a lot of damage to us. So even if we had to give up an aircraft carrier or something for the money, I think this is probably our greatest weakness right now.
Fascinating.
It is. So I have a question. I don't want to give away the villain or his motivation, but I did think that this was a particularly challenging one in terms of why he acts as he does to make it believable. And, you know, did you have to wrestle with that a lot?
I did. He was kind of a character that evolved, because this isn't somebody like a terrorist who has an obvious ideology. This guy's just a sociopath, basically. And so he evolved as I was writing him. Like, for instance, he's a conspiracy theorist. And that wasn't something I had ever planned. It was just he was sitting there talking, and he just started talking about how he didn't believe in the moon landings and things. And it just kind of came out. Because I wanted people to understand, even though there was no overriding ideology behind him, he's not trying to defeat the United States or anything, that it would be believable that he wanted to do it and that he could do it. Because, you know, to me, that's what makes a character, you know, everybody's the hero of their own book, you know, and so every villain, it feels, you know, if they're kicking puppies, they feel justified as to why they're doing it. And I always want to explore that so people know why they're doing what they're doing.
I thought he was a really interesting villain. And as you say, when we first meet him, you wonder, really? And then as you move along, you know, you layer him in, and so he becomes more believable. But I did think he was a real challenge, because as you say, without a clear-cut ideology, or, you know, it's not a, without a foreign attack, it's a little harder to, right, to make that work. Right. If you're going to be writing more, I'm delighted to see, to hear you say that you're going to be writing three more, yay, at least. And you're going to be looking more internally, then you are going to be looking less at foreign actors and more at domestic actors or foreign actors on our soil or however it all goes. It ought to be really interesting challenges for you.
It will be. It's something I've given a lot of thought to, because it's a little bit the third rail now, because everything's so polarized. But I'm very interested in where the world is going, where the United States is going, you know, the survival of democracy, you know, how technology and, you know, Facebook and all these propaganda are affecting democracies. And I think I'm going to try to pile all that into some thriller novels. So we'll see how it works out.
There's an actual QAnon person who's been elected to Congress. I can hardly believe it.
I love QAnon. You know, it's such a great conspiracy theory, you know, for thriller novelists.
They just uncovered the webmaster today.
Bloomberg did
an investigation. They just found the guy that was hosting the website and getting $3,000 a month in donations. They just outed the guy today.
Wow.
Oh, I feel like that's a little disappointing. I thought he would live in a volcano or something.
Hollowed out volcano. You know, I'm gonna wish you the best. I know that Barbara's probably gonna move to Patrick and take some.
But before you go, I have a question for both of you. Don't run away quite yet.
I don't want to. This is Kyle's night. I don't want to hog it.
No. But this is a question for both of you, and I think your answers to it will be really interesting. And it occurred to me while we were talking about how beloved Mitch Rapp is. So the question for you would be, why is Scott Harvest so beloved? What is it about Scott that you feel so appeals to fans that they can't wait for him to reappear? And then Kyle, the same question for you. What is it that makes Mitch so beloved?
So as far as Harvest's concerned, I've always said that I think he's the ultimate Boy Scout. I think he represents the best of us. And, you know, it was actually Vince Flynn had made the comment, and I'm so glad to have known Vince and everything since he passed. He also was very kind to me at the beginning of my career, introduced me to his agent, gave me a blurb for my first book like Kyle did and everything. And Vince used to talk about the Geneva and Hague conventions, and about how, Barbara, if I came to you and said, I have a contract that I've signed that you're going to give me your house, and you didn't sign it, that doesn't mean it's binding on you. So Vince used to talk about this idea of Geneva and Hague conventions were to set kind of the protocols for war and what are the Marcus of Queensbury rules. But if you've got another player who refuses to play by any rule book, should we be bound by the Geneva and Hague conventions? Should we be allowed to break a few eggs to make an omelet to track some of these guys down and get them? And I think Vince really created this genre that Kyle and I are in. Obviously, Kyle's in it because he's continuing Vince's protagonist, but I'm in it. And so I've always said that Harvath, there can be no American dream without those brave men and women willing to go out and do everything they can to protect it. So I think this is why we love Mitch Rapp, we love Scott Harvath, we love Jack Bauer, is because they're willing to break some rules and suffer the consequences personally, whether it's in their career, whether it's in their professional lives, to keep the rest of us safe. And I think we all hope that these people are out there. Kyle's got an interesting background with his family and the FBI, and I've got friends. You know, there's not enough of these guys out there, I'll say that. But there are some, and their job is really, really tough. But I think that's why we love these characters, is that we hope in real life they're out there doing these things for us. We respect that. And we understand the need for, you've got sheep, you need sheepdogs to protect the sheep, but you also need wolf hunters to go after the wolves.
Ooh, very well put. What would you say, Kyle?
Yeah, to me, I agree with all that, but also I think it's really fun to put yourself in the place of these people. You know, you start reading it and you know, life can be frustrating. You can't get things done. You know, we have enemies that we want taken out, but it's very complicated. And these are the people who go straight to their objective and get it done. And with Mitch also, I think one of the things that people love about him is he's got such a long history and he feels so real to them. And you can't even say, who is Mitch? People ask me that, like, who is Mitch Rapp? Like, he was a guy, an American Assassin, when he was 20 something, but then he very much changed when he was married. And now he's very different than that because his wife died and all of this. And I think it becomes this person, at least it was for me, that became a friend of yours and a companion. And once a year, you got together with this companion and saw what they were doing. And so I think those kinds of like really rich series characters speak to us for that reason.
I think that's an excellent point. And before Brad says goodbye, to follow up on that, we are going to do a discussion group with Brad for Near Dark, his most recent Scott Harvath that came out in July, because we really wanted to talk about the ending when we did the launch for that in July. And we knew that you would managed somehow to assassinate us if we did that. So it's going to be sometime in October. Please keep up with Brad's social media and we'll announce it. And if you haven't read Near Dark yet, read it now so that you can come to it without spoilers. I think this is such a good idea. It's so hard to do these discussions and you want to really talk about the whole book, but you can't because of the timing. So Brad, I'm glad you're willing to experiment with us to do that. Many thanks.
Listen, you have been one of the greatest people in my career, Barbara. You've always given me great advice. The bookstore has been so supportive of me over these many, many years. I hope, since I'm going to log off, but will you please, any stories you've got of Vince, please share those, because I know people love hearing about, you know, the first time you met Vince Flynn. Everybody loved him. So I know you've got a special one. So if you'd share that with everybody. I remember the stories of him peddling the book out of the back of his car. I don't know if he did that with you, if he came all the way out to Scottsdale.
Yes, he did. I could remember the day the back door opened and in came this guy carrying a book and looking kind of apprehensive and then telling us about how he'd self-published it. And he did have a trunk full of them. It was amazing.
Yeah, great success story.
It was. Thanks so much, Brad. It was wonderful to see you.
Thanks for having me. And Kyle, I'll see you at the top of the New York Times bestseller list very soon, next week.
Hopefully. Say hi to the family for me.
Right back at you. Thanks for having me, you guys.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
So, Kyle, is there anything else we want to say before? Patrick, do you have a bunch of questions over here?
There's a ton of people turned in,
and Patrick's now trying to filter out questions. So,
okay, yeah.
You want to tell us a Vince Finn story while he's looking?
No, why don't you go ahead? I wanted to hear yours.
Well, I mean, we were very lucky that we were with him from the beginning, as clearly we were, since he rolled up in his car with his trunk full of books. You know, he was, I mean, I don't know how old he was, but he must have been fairly young because, you know, he died so untimely in his 40s. So let's say he must have been in his 20s. And he was a combination of looking both confident and sheepish. all at the same time when he came in with this book. Were you here, Patrick?
No.
We had a little tiny back room, but the store was not, we hadn't taken over the entire building at that point. So we had a very small back room, and so most of us were back there doing something. And Innie came with this book under his arm and asked for me and introduced himself and said, you know, he had self-published this book and he wondered if he could interest us in it. Now, I have to say that normally I would say no, because most of the time that's not going to work out well. But there was something about Vince that really made me feel, aside from good manners, since he was standing in front of me, that I should at least take a copy and read it. And I will always be grateful that I did that.
And was that term limits? That was his first but it didn't have Mitch in it.
No, it was his first book. And, you know, Vince was a really good person, a loyal person. We have found over the years that occasionally success does not go well with authors. They can forget, as with any successful person, they can sort of forget who started out with them. But Vince never forgot. And right up to the very end, even when he couldn't travel, he always came here. He always signed his books. I have a wonderful photo of him and Vince and Rick Reardon in the back room of the store. They were both here at the same time. And it was Vince's last physical appearance at the store because he wasn't able to travel for his last book. But he did indeed. I can't remember if he had to go to New York and sign them there or if they went to Minnesota and he signed them there. I can't remember. But, you know, he stayed with us right to the end. And I've always appreciated that because, you know, we try to stay with everybody when we start with them. And I'm always glad when that's reciprocated. I mean, you and I have been together for the store. We've been together all along. And, you
20
know,
years, yeah, over 20 yeah, years. Man.
It's really been a long time. Sometimes you've been here and occasionally we've had to do it some other way. And this is our first virtual event. But aren't we lucky we have this technology so that we can keep it rolling?
Well, it is lucky. I mean, yeah, it's a lot better than the plague in the 14th century. They didn't have Zoom.
Yes, I often think that the pandemic, it took Zoom to sort of make the pandemic operable for many of us. So I'm grateful that this technology has arisen. Patrick, do you have questions now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I did want to share a little Vince Flynn story as well. Do you remember when we had that, we had a conference at the Biltmore? I remember and it was Vince Flynn and Lee Child. And I remember Lee Child discussing his daily work schedule. And he was saying, you know, I get up at 10:30 in the morning to start my day. And I remember Vince Flynn just giving him a whole ration of crap about that.
As a matter of fact, that was the birth of the International Thrillers Organization. It was Vince and Kathy Reichs and Lee Child and James Rollins and David Morrell and Gail Lins. I'm trying to remember who else. And that was the famous night when they were gathered in the bar afterward and complaining that the other major mystery writers organization was not really giving them enough space and respect and so forth. And I got so fed up with them, I finally, that I'd had a drink or two, looked over at them and I said, stop whining, start your own organization. And there's deathly silence ensued and they all kind of lit up. And David and Gail stepped up and right there, IDW was born and Vince was there for it. It was wonderful. I'm glad you reminded me of that. Yeah, it was so cool.
Just to get onto some of the questions here, before Brad left, I was going to ask him, you know, if he would have an idea, how would he approach writing a Mitch Rapp book? And then conversely, how would you approach writing a Harvath novel?
Oh, I don't know. I think exactly the same way. It's worked out so well for me. I mean, I'd have to go back and reread them all, take all those notes again, and then think about where it's going. You know, and all those little things, like he's aging the characters and how do you handle that? And how, you know, what characters did you love that you wanted to bring back? Which ones didn't you understand? Because the ones I didn't understand, I just killed off really quickly. So as it was easier, I kept thinking, what should I do with these characters? And I thought, oh my God, I'm the author, I'll just kill them all. And that's the formula that's worked for me for sure.
Oh my God, I have just been struck with inspiration. That's how you two could write a collaborative piece. You could write Scott and he could write Mitch. I'm serious.
That would be hilarious, actually.
Wouldn't
yeah, we
that
could do
be
a couple of short stories.
Suggest it to him. I think, Patrick, you have struck upon a really great thought.
I think you could give him some weaknesses that we never knew about. And
happened. I think this would just start a war. I'd make him a hairdresser. And
dark secret. Yeah.
I love it.
Well, to get on to some serious stuff here.
Okay.
Are there any attributes of Mitch, let's see, which you are purposely featuring differently than Vince? Is there anything?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, again, it's the arc of the character. Mitch was never one guy. He evolves just like a real person. So when I inherited him, you know, his wife had been killed. Things had gone pretty badly for him, and he'd become really, really dark and really violent. And I've brought him back from that little bit, brought him back from the brink. I've given him a little bit of a life again, which he didn't have. It had all been taken away from him. A little bit of happiness, you know, thinking about what's next in his life. So I don't think it's anything different than Vince would have done, though. I think, you know, he would have continued to evolve that character similarly to the way I have.
Okay, there's someone named Maria asks, will there be a series spinoff for Anna Gould Rapp?
You know, it's so funny that's the second time I've been asked that. It never crossed my mind. So Anna's only like 7 at this point. So I don't know, like 12-year-old assassin. He's sneaky. Well,
this looks like a younger viewer from the picture here. So maybe a YA novel.
Well, it could be, you know, and it's funny because I have her she has a little bit of anger issues and Mitch is thinking, you know, that's coming from her father, and that's going to be hard to deal with when she's 16. So you never know. You never know.
Well, I'll intervene here and say that John Sanford introduced a teenager into the Lucas Davenport series named Letty. And he has mentioned to me that he's thinking about giving Letty her own book, since there's extra time during the pandemic to think about projects. that Letty may get a book. So, you know, I think this is a perfectly reasonable question.
You never know. I mean, honestly, Vince's universe is so huge and so rich. There are a number of characters that it would be a blast to do spinoffs of. I mean, you think about Scott Coleman, you know, Stan Hurley. There's a lot.
Let's see. Justine asks, what is the hardest part of writing these books? You can identify something like that.
You know, the hardest part, I think, is always being conscious not to write a Kyle Mills book with Mitch Rapp in it. Because, I don't know, depending on people who've read my books that I wrote under my own name, my style and Vince's are nothing alike. So if I were to slip into that, I think I would have the potential to write potentially a good book, but a really bad Mitch Rapp book. And I'm always conscious of that.
How do you distinguish between a Kyle Mills book and a Mitch Rapp book? That's an interesting thought that you just presented.
Well, I think it's been easy, easier because his style and my style are so different. I don't get them confused. And it's funny, I probably shouldn't say this, but you once said to me, you know, my impression of you is that you wrote your books for you and Vince's books for his fans. And I think that's probably a very accurate observation, that I wrote books about subjects I was fascinated by, with characters I was fascinated by. One wasn't necessarily like the other. So it wasn't like a series necessarily. Whereas I'm always very conscious of what Vince's style was and what his fans love, because, you know, obviously if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Okay.
I have a couple of questions that deal with your research. And how many hours of research versus writing is typical for each book? I don't know if you could put it into hours, but.
I don't know if I could put it into hours. It depends on the book too. You know, some books, if they're very character driven, it might be none, almost none. And then a book like this, where I was researching the grid, you know, there were 200 page reports from Congress on the grid that I was sitting around reading. So this one was high. Plus the research was so interesting. You know, if you find something like that, it'll write itself. You know, the threat kind of writes itself. You don't have to make anything up. So with this one, it was a lot of time. I mean, probably, I would think 20% of my time was spent on research.
I've had a couple people mention Ted Koppel's book, Lights Out. Have you read that?
I did, yep. Yeah, so that's a nonfiction book about the grid and the vulnerabilities to the grid.
Yeah, I'm going to add, going back too to my cyber warriors comments, that while Kyle has dreamed up a bad actor, in fact, a native bad actor to take out the power grid, we may be at more risk from climate and from a lack of maintenance, or, you know, a worn out or not updated maybe system, than we are from an actual terrorist attack. But either way, it will be catastrophic if it goes that way. I mean, California is experiencing, or will be experiencing, it appears, rolling blackouts or brownouts. And certainly here in Arizona, when the power goes out, if it's even for a few hours, particularly in the summer, our homes become uninhabitable very quickly, you know, with the temperature. So we are at risk, but it may not necessarily be in a terrorist scenario. It may be just a changing world.
Well, and it doesn't take much. I mean, you look at the big power outage on the Eastern Seaboard in 2003, that was a sagging power line and a branch, you know, took out the entire. So it's not much. It's a very delicate machine.
It really is. I mean, any of these big hurricanes, you know, we wind up, or big storms knocks power out for for people. And, you know, it's always a question of how fast they can get it back up again. Anything else over there?
Yeah, somebody asked a really smart question about how, you know, classical heroes, one of the things that make them a hero is their vulnerabilities. Can you talk a little bit about that, or do you see that as true? You know, how do you not just make him a superman without any sort of vulnerable traits?
I think that's true, but it depends on if it's an internal vulnerability or external. So I think there's a whole type of character that I think of as the outlaw Josie Wales, right? If you have ever seen that movie, nobody wants to see him lose, in the sense of, you don't want to see Superman bleed, right? It's you're watching him because he's so superhuman and he's always going to win. You want to know how. So I see Mitch as being very much that way. I probably pushed him as hard as I could with this Grisha Afsarov character that I talked about before. His vulnerabilities to me that I'm exploring are more internal. What's he doing with his life? You know, how's he going to incorporate, you know, a kind of a daughter and his significant other into his life? You know, is he endangering them? Those are the kinds of insecurities that he has. In a sense, he's most comfortable with the gun. You know, the other stuff's hard for him.
Question about titles. Do you have a hard time coming up with titles, or?
No, it's the easiest thing in the world. I don't do it. I'm trying to think if I've ever titled one of my books. I send them in and I think everybody laughs, and then they pick another one. They pick a better one. So this one, I don't even think I tried on this one. I think Vince's editor, Emily Bessler, this one popped into her head immediately, and it was great. So we ran with it.
And how about your own work? Kyle, when are we going to see a new Kyle Mills novel?
I don't know. You know, Vince Flynn's series is keeping me pretty busy, and I've never been able to split my focus. I've been working on a sequel to a book I called Fade, that I've been working on it for 10 years, and I think I have 10 pages, so it might be a long wait for that. So we'll see, though. I don't know. I there are a million ideas out there, and they're all would be fun to explore.
On that note, Anne asks, would you consider a Stan Hurley prequel?
Yes. I mean, I would actually love to do that. And maybe if someday I decide that, you know, I don't want to do any more of the Mitch Rapp stuff, I don't know, maybe I'd pitch a Stan Hurley thing, because I grew up on the Soviet thrillers, the Soviet era thrillers, you know, Tom Clancy and Robert Ludlum and all these amazing authors. And it would be really fun to just, I picture it like when he's young in the 50s or something, writing a you know, him battling the Soviets in the 50s. I think that would be super interesting book to write.
So I have a question. I mentioned it earlier that I thought that the terrifying, almost opening scene in Total Power, where it all takes place on an airplane. Did you have to block that out? I mean, you know, there's a lot of action. You had to orchestrate that scene to make it work, because there are multiple players involved. Did you have to lay it out in your mind and block out the action in order to bring it off?
Absolutely. So that's, most people probably don't know, but I live part-time in Spain, and that in Granada, that's my home airport. So I knew the airport pretty well. And then I made my wife take pictures when we were flying out of it, but she got caught by security and they deleted all the pictures off her phone. So I didn't have them. But then, yes, I had explored that whole thing when I was flying out, from the standpoint of how would this all work. And then I used a diagram of the plane. I got it off, I think, like Seated Visor or something, the actual plane that flies from Granada to Madrid, and then blocked it all out as to who sat where and how far it was and who was armed with what. It took quite a while, actually. I have a big poster of it that was on my wall with all the seats and everybody marked on it so I could remember.
I asked because I have actually been on a flight from Madrid to Barcelona, but I've also been on the flight from Granada, which I think is a gorgeous city. My happiest New Year's Eve ever was spent at the Alhambra.
Really?
Yes.
Oh,
then the next day. So we saw the Alhambra by night under all the lights, and it was fabulous. And then we went back the next day. And in between, we drank a great deal of Rioja in the gypsy caves across the way. So,
oh, yeah. You're watching dancing?
Oh, yes. I think Granada is an amazing city. But anyway, I've been on those flights with, what's the name of the Spanish? I'm trying to remember the Spanish airline that starts with an A.
That was Iberia.
Iberia probably. Starts with an I, not an A. Well, I was close. Yeah, anyway, yeah. On Iberia. And so I could visualize the flight, but I did think that to make the action work required a good deal of almost like a stage designer. I mean, a director of a stage thing, you know, blocking the action to make it plausible. Did you have another question that popped up?
I do have a couple of questions.
Okay, two more, and then we'll
be done. I'm just typing, good question. let's see here. okay, this is a question about kind of the vetting process. Does anyone scrutinize your books to make sure you're not inadvertently documenting secret information?
No, you only have to do that if you worked for the government. So, you know, if you're Jack Carr or somebody like that, then you have to have your stuff vetted. But if you're not, you're good to go.
All right. This is a question that a bunch of people have asked, which is, would you consider writing a sequel to Killshot, completing Vince's prequel trilogy?
Yes, I've actually pitched that before, but I didn't get a lot of traction. So someday, maybe, yeah. There were a lot of loose ends there, and it would be fun to, you know, kind of gather them all up, because, you know, he and Hurley hated each other back then. He had a girlfriend named Greta, and nobody knows whatever happened.
Yeah, several people have mentioned Greta and what happened to her, and are there any?
And I have it in my head too. I have it in my head what happened to Greta, and someday maybe I'll write about it.
Judging by the number of people who've asked on this tonight, that would be great. Any developments on Netflix or other TV or film stuff going on?
We're working on it, but you know, it's really stalled right now because of coronavirus. You know, it's hard to film and it's hard to get deals done right now. So fingers crossed, it could be either way, could go either way. You know, it'd be fun to do a series because you have so much material, but also fun to go back and do another feature film. So hopefully when everything returns to normal, that'll get going again.
Well, I'm sure it will. This has been so wonderful. What a treat to be able to launch your new book with you, Kyle.
Yes. Again,
I know. Yes.
Thank you.
Well, you know, it's different. It's not like we were in the store facing, you know, hundreds of fans. On the other hand, we had bread. So yeah, it's a trade-off, right?
Which was fun. Though I do like coming down and warming up a little bit from Wyoming. You know, every launch, I got to come down and wear my flip-flops, and it's kind of nice.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's hope that by next year, travel will again be possible. And yeah, are you going back to Spain? I know you have a second home there, so yeah, are you moving
hopefully
back?
Hopefully. I was supposed to be there in June. We were supposed to fly back in June, but it wasn't possible because we didn't want to get on a plane. So now the thought is January 1st, but it, you know, you can't make plans anymore. So no. Fingers crossed.
Well, we'll see. But what I'm dreaming of, since I'm so crazy about Granada, is when you go back there, whenever that might be, you and I are going to do a Zoom program and we're going to tour Granada. And
why don't you just get on a plane and come visit?
Well, that's another thought.
We can take a phone and film.
We could do that, right?
Call it a business trip. It'll be a business trip.
And the truth is, it's a city that would really lend itself to, I mean, one of the great thriller scenarios of all time was when Isabella and Ferdinand defeated the Moors and liberated Granada. Los Reyes, yep, Católicos were actually buried there. And Granada is such an interesting city because it was possible for Moors and Jews and Catholics to live together until that sort of crusader thing rose up and it was time to drive them out. But it was a wonderful, cosmopolitan, very multicultural and tolerant city under the Moors.
And that's still, you know, it's still very evident. My house, in fact, had, you know, Arabic writing in the archways and stuff still, because it was about 500 years old. So called a Morisco, like a Moorish house. Had two front doors because, you know, for family, but the guests couldn't see the women, so you went in the other door. So kind of a very interesting history, and I just one of the most beautiful cities in the world.
It really is. Well, another time we'll discuss how you happened to go to Spain and buy a Moorish house, but probably not a good idea this evening. So thank you so much. And I want to thank all of you who've watched this. Don't forget that you can get a copy, an autographed copy of Total Power, with this fabulous Christmas card. And we still have some Near Darks by Brad that you can do. And I will let you know, and Brad will let you know, and we're able to schedule our discussion club for Near Dark. And in fact, that might be so much fun. We should think about doing that for many thriller writers.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a great idea because it is really hard to dance around the plot.
No, exactly. So we might do that. In any case, thank you for joining us and good night. Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.